Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. In a world where action movies are constantly exploding at the box office, our heroes take on the monumental task of dissecting and analyzing all aspects of action movies to truly understand what it takes to make a great action film. Ben Bateman, Andrew Guy, in a Popcorn Talk Network exclusive, this is Action Movie Anatomy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another show 39 or 40 or something like that.
It's around there, which means The Rock is coming soon.
Yes, if you guys didn't know, The Rock starring Ed Harris is number 50. That'll be coming up here in about 2 months and a half or so.
If you're
so.
Friends with Ed, just let him know.
Just let him know. Yeah, I'm calling it right now. Ed Harris will be somewhere in the world when we do the show. But hopefully he's in here with us. But that's not what we're talking about today. Today we're talking about something else entirely, and that is... Immortality! Take it! It's yours!
We are lions!
We're talking about Troy and all of the tan and blonde
and absiness
of this movie of 2004's Wolfgang Petersen epic film, the adaptation of the Iliad by Homer.
Yeah.
Troy.
About the great battle of Troy. And
yes.
It's not even about whether it happened or not, but that's a big thing that historians have been talking about lately, is whether it happened or not and which site it is. We're not going to get into that because that's not what this is about.
No, this is about a much sweeter thing than that, and that is the film.
Yes.
The film adaptation of Troy. So this is Action Movie Anatomy, guys. I'm your host, Ben Bateman, and this is Mr. Andrew Guy.
Wearing my pink shirt. Good to see you guys.
Yeah, guys. Welcome to the show. This is another one of these weird movies where Andrew grew up watching this movie,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't. I had never seen this movie,
yeah.
So this was a new one where I like got to. And I think to some degree, the film benefited from having an audience when it first came out,
yes.
and has suffered greatly in the time since it came out. Because I mean, it's not like this movie was ever regarded as like a critical masterpiece. It was always pretty mediocre, like at right around the 60%ers,
right.
But I mean, as a new watcher. It's like a head scratcher for me.
It's another one of those, like Independence Day, where you ask people, have you seen Troy? And they're like, oh my God, I love Troy. That movie's sweet. And then they go back and they watch it, all 3 hours of it. And they're like, this is not good.
No.
This is not a great movie. And because when I was sitting there and we were trying to figure out what movie we were going to do because we were supposed to be doing 13 hours. And due to scheduling conflicts, we just couldn't make it happen. And I was looking at my DVD collection and I was looking through them and I saw Troy and I was like, oh. I had that moment. The same moment when I thought of The Patriot.
Yeah, which was a smashing success.
A great movie.
Damn him, damn that man.
Damn him, damn that man. This did not go over so well. Did not.
But, like, ultimately, it's like a very, very entertaining...
Absolutely.
Very, very entertaining movie. I mean, as soon as I could let go of the idea that this was going to be a good movie,
right.
this was just going to be pure entertainment... which is what the middle category in our show often is,
mm-hmm.
Then it became quite entertaining to talk about.
Yeah.
So anyway, guys, this is Action Movie Anatomy. We talk about action movies on this show. The action movies on this show adhere to four basic rules, as well as being made after 1981, which is just like a loose framework we use. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. And it's hard to know really who the hero in this movie is, but I guess if it's Brad Pitt, he definitely plays by his own rules.
That's true.
Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, pirates, dinosaurs, whatever in the room. Rule number three, the movie is driven by a police, military, political, or mercenary figure. And when we say political, it means they can either be the man or work for the man. So they could be an MTA operator and they're taking a pill in 1, 2, 3. And lastly, the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. There are explosions in this film.
Yes.
There are a lot of oily shots of Brad Pitt's abs in this film.
Explosive.
His abs play by their own rules.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. And they're the smartest people in the room.
Yeah. on either side. Just like,
I don't know what we're doing right now.
No. I guess he's a warrior. He's a soldier. So
well,
he's,
Hector, if we talked Hector, you know, like...
Yeah.
He's... I don't know.
They're both military to some degree.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. I mean,
they're
Achilles
both soldiers.
Is the greatest warlord out there.
Yeah, so they're both soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, who are the smartest people in the room? Achilles is... No, he's not, though.
He's not. It's definitely Peter O'Toole.
Yeah.
But he's not really... I don't know,
Brian Cox, I feel like, maybe is the smartest guy in the room.
Even though he looks like the dumbest guy in the room.
He's so fat and arrogant. He's just the greatest.
Every single costume that he wears, which is hilarious, because this movie was nominated for costume design, He looks like a fat guy shoved in a Halloween costume. And I love Brian Cox. He's one of my favorites.
Love him to death. Like, Brian Cox is like, he's like, for me, not quite on the Wilkinson level, but he's like one, maybe a half a step behind Wilkinson on that, like, feels like he could play anything character kind of level. But I do have to say that if Wilkinson was in this role, I probably would have bought it a little more.
Right.
But then again, you never know, because I love Brendan Gleeson as well, and he looks exactly the same, just strange and fat and, like, wearing a weird costume. Anyway, so that's what we do here on the show, is we cover movies that have those four basic rules. So aside from that, you can find us on Twitter. We have a Twitter now called AMA Podcast. If you guys look that up, you can tweet at us during the show. Yep. I am Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
I'm Andrew Guy. You can find me at Andrew Guy.
Yes, and aside from that, be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you give us like ratings and reviews on iTunes, it'll help us stay higher in the standings. People find out about the show. We keep doing the show. We obviously provide free content, and it's easier to do if people know about us and keep listening. So give us a rating or a review, and check out the other Popcorn Shock shows on iTunes as well.
Yeah.
Should we show the trailer to
Let's
Troy?
Let's do it. Let's do the trailer.
Let's cue the trailer. Like, that's an interesting shot for a 2004 trailer already. Doesn't look weird.
5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
The passion for one woman.
The passion for one woman.
Ignited the greatest battle ever fought. For love.
I should just take that tagline.
Will you go to war with me, brother?
We're sending the largest fleet that ever sailed.
We need the greatest warrior.
Achilles can't be controlled.
Oh, this trailer's better than the movie.
Yeah.
First, you need the victory.
I won't ask you to fight my war. You already have.
You already have.
I submit to a foreign ruler.
Pitt's, like, jump punch that he does with the sword, like, three different times.
I wish they only did it the once or twice.
No, it's his signature move.
It's a sweet move.
It's super sweet.
Super sweet move.
Immortality!
Time is done. I will look down on your corpse and smile.
Oh, no, Diana Kruger dropping trowel.
She is gorgeous.
Like, Diana Kruger, the most interesting thing in the film.
Right?
Zero question.
Dude, that trailer is sweet.
It's a sweet trailer.
It's a very good trailer.
Yeah. If I watched that trailer, I probably would have thought that was going to be a good movie.
And it was. Yeah. All right.
So anyway, that is the trailer for Troy. A very above average trailer, and makes me want to just go watch the film again.
Until you start watching the film again.
Though I do have to say that this movie is like a level of entertainingly dumb at times, to the point that like I think this would be fun on rewatch. Like I think actually now that I've seen it and we've like laughed about parts of it.
Yeah.
I think this movie would be sweeter to watch than it seemed while I was expecting it to be a better movie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, there would definitely need to be some substances involved, whatever they may be, whether it's wine or scotch or a plant. whatever it needs to be, it matters. You need it on the rewatch.
Yeah, absolutely. So this next thing we're going to do here is a segment that we do called Action Movie Tagline. And so this is a thing that we started doing kind of recently where basically like when we were kids and we would go to the actual video store. I know video stores like don't really exist anymore, but back in the day, you would go to the video store and the VHS tapes would be all like lined up along the wall. And we would, you know, you worked in a Blockbuster for a while as a kid. And
it was a good time.
Yeah, I used to walk to Hollywood Video in my neighborhood and go and peruse the boxes. And on the fronts of the boxes, you'd always have these little like snippets, like part of a longer review, you know, like a slam bang action thriller or a nonstop adrenaline thrill ride or something. And then you'd flip the movie over and, you know, there'd be like a longer quote, like part of the New York Times review or something. And
that's
so,
what we're doing.
Yeah, so we came up with our own action movie taglines now. Okay. And we each share one. And so we came up with our own action movie taglines. For Troy, they don't have to be that serious. Sometimes they are.
Okay, well, I'm going to do... I think mine's a little more serious today.
Okay.
It's a little stupid.
Mine's not. Nice.
Okay. I'll go first.
Yeah.
Be prepared to feel like a god among men as the mighty Achilles tears through Hector's unstoppable Trojan army, all for the face of a beautiful woman. Brian Cox, Brendan Gleeson, Brad Pitt, Peter O'Toole, Diane Kruger, Orlando Bloom, Sean Bean, Eric Bana. I can't list any more of them.
Troy! Very good. You know.
You know.
It's solid.
I just wanted to list all 20 of the people.
Yeah, it's funny. I see where you were going with that.
I'm glad.
Comedy.
Yes.
You do improv.
I do.
Good. Good for you, Drew. I'm going to see if I can deliver mine. I'm hoping that I can do this and not trip up, because I think I might, but I'm going to try anyway.
You're really setting yourself up for failure here.
Here we go. Break out the bronzer. All right, let me start.
Sorry.
Break out the bronzer, because this summer boasts a film too hot to handle. Brad Pitt's face may as well be the face that launched 1,000 ships. Sex. Violence. More bronzer. Brad Pitt is Troy!
He's not.
That's the whole point of the movie, though. It's all they sold.
Oh, that's good. That's real good.
More bronzer.
There's a lot of bronzer in this film. A
lot of bronzer, yeah.
You do like 6 months of training to look like the way he looks.
Yeah. He gets insanely jacked.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Almost shredded. Almost like uncomfortable to look at how jacked
it
he is.
It is uncomfortable.
Yeah, like at times early on in the film, you're like, the only people that are that tan, this sculpted,
are
porn stars.
People like, that have sex for money.
Yeah. Like the dudes in porn are that jacked. Like, yeah. To an uncomfortable gross
degree.
It's
like every time you look at him and you like see like the crease that goes down to his pelvis, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And he just worked his, like, I've heard about the diet and the workout.
Oh,
like,
it's insane.
Because he's a pretty little dude. Mm-hmm. Everybody always talks about in Fight Club how there's like the shot with the glove on and like how he's like the most jacked dude in the world. And everybody wanted to have like the Brad Pitt body because he's like super lean and super cut. But he weighed like 150 pounds or something. He's tiny in that movie. Whereas in this movie, I think he's like 30 or 40 pounds heavier. Like,
yeah. He had to quit smoking.
Yeah.
Like he was going, and he tore his Achilles, which is very ironic.
Yeah. Running around in the sand.
Yeah.
Yeah. During filming. Anyway, that's our action movie tagline, guys. Mm-hmm. So,
yours was good. It was good.
Thank you. I actually think I had another line that I forgot, but, it worked.
Yeah. I forgot like 4 characters and I listed 9 already. So
yeah. I just like that you laughed out loud when I said break out the bronzer.
I just didn't know where it was going, man.
All right, guys. So this next thing we're going to do here is called Thesis Statement. So this is kind of what it sounds like. We talk about the film and we share a strong opinion, something that is really rooted in like a very, very strong opinion about the film. And so this is supposed to kind of like sell what you believe about the movie, and we kind of defend it all throughout the episode. Shouldn't be anything too loose. It shouldn't be this is my favorite Brad Pitt movie or like... You know, it should be like maybe this is the first time this ever happened. This is the greatest this. And that's, or even you can go a little more broad if you want.
Right.
But it should be a strong opinion.
Yeah.
Would you like to go first or shall I?
I will go first. I will go first. And my thesis is that this movie is the greatest example of the correlation of how good a movie is to how young you are.
Okay.
When it came out.
Right.
And how fucked up you are. Like, directly. Because this movie is not good.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie. It's enjoyable, kind of, but it's so long.
Yeah.
So this movie, the reason that I was so stoked on this movie is because I watched it in college with my roommates a lot. And as you can imagine, a lot of things go on in college that make you a little, you're in a better mood.
Yeah, your decision-making is impaired, your
motor skills are impaired.
Maybe you're a little more willing to cheer for things, and...
And when I went back and watched this movie, I was like, yeah, that's why this movie was so good, is because I watched this movie when I was like 18, 19, and 20.
Yeah.
And with my roommates in college.
It should be noted, though, just for anybody listening who's hearing us say that Troy is not a good movie.
It's not that it's a... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
It should be noted that, like, I can name at least 5 movies we've done on this show, what we've covered, like, knowing the movie's not a good movie, like...
Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, Con Air.
Con Air's not a good movie.
It's not a good movie. I love that movie.
Yeah,
Independence Day.
Not
face
a good movie.
Off, no.
But very entertaining movies. It's
absolutely.
Just when you go into those movies, because, well, not Taking. Taking is closer to this. But those others, Face Off and Con Air, they're, like, part of that genre of film where, like, you know it's really silly and you're going into it to mm-hmm. watch a silly movie. This is an Oscar-nominated epic directed by the guy that directed Das Boot. Like, this is supposed to be...
Incredible.
I mean, it's in
the cast.
Yeah.
There's like 200... There's like 500 movie credits combined in this movie for all the actors.
I mean, Brad Pitt says in one of his interviews about this film that he modeled his character. He said, because one of the questions is like, did you find it so difficult to play such an arrogant character because you're such kind of a reserved dude? Like, he's a pretty quiet guy in real life. Brad mm-hmm. Pitt's not like a big... He's not cocky.
Right.
He doesn't say a lot of stuff in the media. He was like, I just modeled my approach after Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia.
Right.
He compares Achilles to Peter O'Toole in Lawrence of Arabia.
Sweet.
One of maybe the 5 or 10 greatest movies of all time.
And performances
Yeah, like,
Peter O'Toole is so good in this movie.
And he's great in this movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's, like, what they were going for. He's, like, watching Lawrence of Arabia and spending 7 months preparing for this movie. And then, like, what you get is, like, some strange crossbreed of, like, a porno and, like, The Patriot or something.
Yeah.
It's, like, and trying like to be Gladiator.
Movie. Yeah, I don't even know. So, I think that your enjoyment of this movie directly correlates to all those things that I just mentioned. Age, when it came out, and how drunk you are.
Fair enough. So, I thought a lot about this because the biggest complaint that I had for this movie, the biggest thing that I think detracts from it, is that I think this movie has no soul.
Yes.
It feels, it is void almost entirely of any emotional, it doesn't trigger anything.
There's one emotional scene in the movie.
Yeah, and I will talk about that a little later, but I mean, obviously this is subject to opinion, so people could probably like certain scenes we don't like as much, but on the whole, a movie as long as this with as great of actors as this movie has, because the cast is studs.
It's like, amazing.
Loaded.
I love everyone that's acting in this movie for the most part.
Great actors. So what I thought about was that, like, the adaptation of The Iliad by Homer is, it's a story, a mythical story of kings and warriors and a huge battle and these legendary warriors.
Mm-hmm.
So you're supposed to learn all these lessons when you watch Troy. Like, it's supposed to echo all of these, you know what I mean? It's an analog for all these real life lessons that would still apply in real life, that, you know, arrogance is tragic and all that. I think that the real lesson learned here is the studio system. Troy is like a great metaphor for the studio system.
And like greed?
Greed and arrogance being your downfall. Because this movie cost $175 million to make and wanted in every way to be Gladiator. It wanted to be a movie like that. That's what they were going for. And ultimately, you're rushing this movie out after Braveheart wins Best Picture in 95 and Gladiator wins Best Picture in 2000. And now you've got the biggest movie star in the world in 03 in Brad Pitt. You know, it's like him and Cruise in 03, like the guys. And you're rushing this movie out and you're saying, okay, we're just going to let's make Brad Pitt the golden god. Let's make him, you know, the most beautiful, like, jacked warrior in the world. Surround him with great actors. Mm-hmm. Let's just go for it.
Spend a shitload of money.
And build these crazy sets. And at the end of the day, like, it's a bad script. It doesn't, like, the writing is not good. The editing, it cut 30 minutes out of the film.
I mean, this movie, the costume design is so good, but the set design
looks really cheesy and chintzy.
It's horrible. And the lighting, it's you feel like you're watching a movie. You know what I mean? Like, you just feel like you're looking at a set.
I mean, when you go watch, say, Gone with the Wind or a movie from that era, like, it looks dated for a reason. It's from 70 years ago.
Well, go back and watch Gladiator.
Yeah.
You know, it's 4 years, 5 years prior to this movie.
It looks much better.
It looks much better in every single way.
And we talk about that. So anyway, to the final point of that is, before we getting into design and all that, this movie is much more of a lesson to be taught to the studio system in Hollywood than it is at all lessons to be taught to us in current culture about tragic arrogance or anything like that, greed. It really is an analog for that. I mean, you can't just throw money and velocity at something and expect it to work. Now, on a financial level, it did work.
It did. Not here, but overseas, people loved it.
Yeah.
Again, we'll get into that later. Mike, do you think that, despite everything that you just talked about, the writing and blah, 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 because we know, and if you guys go back and watch our Gladiator episode, which is a phenomenal episode, it's my favorite movie.
Yeah.
The writing in that movie was not good either.
No, it was mostly
falling apart. It was written on set.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe, like, walked off set numerous times saying that the writer sucked and that, you know, he could make his shitty writing good because he's the greatest, blah, 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 blah. Do you think that if Brad Pitt gave a Russell Crowe worthy performance, a Gladiator performance in this movie, could it have saved it? Or would it just be like watching something great in a pile of shit?
I think a couple things. So the first thing is, we've talked a lot about Brad Pitt and his quality as an actor. And it's like when you sort of rank actors and you think about what they're capable of doing, there's different kinds of actors, right? So we both love Daniel Day-Lewis. We both love Johnny Depp. We love these actors that can really disappear. I mean, classic Depp. In his day.
Mm-hmm.
The guys that can really disappear in roles, like, where you really believe them. Then the next level of guys are guys where they do an excellent job at what they're doing, but you can usually see the actor in the role. Like, Cruise very rarely ever loses you.
No, he's always Cruise.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's so good at what he does that he'll get you, but, like, it's not really the same as watching somebody who just disappears into a role.
Right.
And then you,
like,
have
Cruise
guys...
Cruise in Magnolia is... I mean, even though he's playing a version of himself, it's the vulnerability that you never see.
Yeah, and to some degree, I mean, Cruise is able to be a chameleon in some of those roles. Like, he's very good at it. With Pitt, it's like, this movie is a great example of what he wasn't capable of doing. Like, he's terrible in this movie. He's not terrible because he particularly, like, over or under acts certain scenes. It's
he overacts almost all of his scenes. His delivery.
I think he's not suited for this character. Like,
right.
In a way where you talk about Crow's a true brilliant actor. Like, mm-hmm. Crow loses me in his greatest roles.
Absolutely.
I get lost. And so I think about Brad Pitt in the roles where he's been heralded as really great.
Ones like Fight Club, Inglourious Basterds, 12 Monkeys.
Yes, yeah, Snatch, like, mm-hmm. Benjamin Button. Like, he's got some really great roles. He's also got, like, he just sort of sounds like Brad Pitt talking. Like, for instance, a lot of the scenes that he's talking in this movie, I'm just like, I kind of just feel like I'm watching Rusty from Ocean's 11 right now.
Right.
You know?
Right, with an accent.
Yeah, like, you don't...
And, like, a brevity.
He just doesn't... Like, okay, is there no one else when he's doing that?
No one else. That could have been so sweet.
Could have been so cool.
Well, that was the moment. That was the moment. Because actually, we'll talk about that right now. We're going to get into our fist pump moment. Ben, yeah. Can you please intro the fist pump moment? Because I want to show mine in the clip, and then we'll talk about right after my fist pump moment. And that moment.
Yeah, okay, so fist bump moment is the part of the show, guys, where if you ever have that moment where you're watching a movie, and I like to say this is when you're by yourself, because that's like when fist bump moments really are the greatest. It's like something happens in the movie, you want to pause it, rewind it, go get your roommate or your girlfriend or whatever, and be like, hey, you have to come watch this. Or if nobody's around, you want to call your best friend and just be like, dude, have you seen Warrior? Like Mad Dog Grimes, that's such a cool fucking scene. Right. And you get so pumped up, and it could be anything, you know what I mean? It could just be like, you're watching Terminator 2, and it's like,
yes!
And you're just so pumped up. Could be anything. Could be the credits in a movie. Could be a one-liner. You know, it could be like when Schwarzenegger's like, this captain minister, does he always travel on the wrong side of the border?
Damn him. Damn that man.
Could be anything. And so that's what we talk about here. And so fist pump moment is that moment in the movie for you where you're just like, this is sweet.
Yeah.
And as bad as this movie is at times, it definitely has some fist pump moments.
Totally.
For better or for worse, there's some good ones. And I think we'll cue yours and you can go first.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about this before we cue it. I'll get you, Mark. So we're going to see 13 Hours. Things didn't work out. So we go back. We're at Ben's house. We're about to turn on Troy. And I'm like, he's like, well, let's talk about it. What other movies can we do? And I'm like, just watch the first 10 minutes with me. Yeah. Trust me. So my fist pump moment is when is when Achilles gets called out and he comes up and there's this just gigantic, gigantic soldier that he's supposed to fight. And it's just nonchalant. Casually just destroys him. I should have you whipped for your impudence. Perhaps you should fight him.
Perhaps you should fight him. Achilles. Achilles.
Achilles.
Because he's still sweet right here.
Yeah, yeah, he's cool.
Yeah.
And he has that sweet line right before this.
Mm-hmm.
That is why no one will remember your name.
That is why no one will remember your name. Yeah, that's a good line.
Cox.
It just sounds exactly like Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
All the warlords loved by the gods. I hate him the most.
Yeah. So, like, this is all sweet.
Yeah, this is good.
Totally
You're in.
Totally in.
And I'm like, yes. I'm like, Ben's into this movie. This is going to be sweet. And then this moment's going to happen. He's going to be even more into it.
Yeah.
And then he's going to say this sweet line.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Doesn't even care.
Nope. Dodge. Straight through the trap, into the heart. Done. So sweet. But then... and then that was the moment.
Is there no one else?
Which, like, no fault to Brad here.
It's not, yeah.
It's not like he, I don't, it's like, I don't really think he blows it. It's like,
it's just something about it.
Like, that's what I'm talking about. That's the flaw in Brad Pitt. It's like, he's missing, he's like missing something.
Even though he's the most badass warlord, fighter, soldier, he's just not a badass.
Yeah, like I was just trying, like if you try to think about like if that had been Crow.
Yeah.
Like it would have just been better.
It would have been way better.
Like way sweeter.
And that was the point. That was when I realized what was happening when we were watching this movie. I was like, yes, there's a lot of sweetness in this movie, but then it's followed with things like that. And that's what the next 2.5 hours are going to be like. So that was my fist pump moment. I think it's super awesome.
Yeah.
And then it immediately goes down.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is I was like rooting through like great action scenes last week. I didn't even tell you, but I came across that scene. I watched that scene. I had never watched the movie, but I just watched that one scene.
Really?
And that's why I had seen it already.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, oh, this is sweet. I was like, oh, this movie is probably pretty sweet.
Right.
And like that, yeah, so I had seen it. All right, so my fist pump moment is it's the first time you see Brian Cox. It's literally just Brian Cox on screen, and you see him, and he's got this ridiculous, like, braided hair.
He's, like, 5'4",
and he's like,
like.
And he's, like, this fat king who's, like, just, like, a CIA agent from, like, the Bourne movies.
Right, right.
Like, he's a character actor who, like, is a great actor, so it's not like the material is over his head or something. It's, like, of course he could do it. It's just, like. That was a big problem for me in this movie. It's like the exact same thing happened when I saw Brendan Gleeson minutes
later.
He
looks like a hobbit.
Yeah, he looks like a hobbit. You see him and I just saw him and I just like laughed out loud and I was like, Brian Cox, all right.
Yeah, right.
That's what this movie looks like. And I was just like, fist pump, fuck yeah, this is sweet. Like, I can't wait. Then I saw Brendan Gleeson and I was like, another, oh, of course.
Yeah, of course.
He looks just the same and they're brothers. It's like,
I'm going to change my thesis statement to that Brendan Gleeson and Brian Cox are the greatest brother combo of all time.
Of all time in any movie.
Yeah, even over Edgerton and Hardy.
Yeah, pretty great. That was my fist bump moment. I just like couldn't find another moment in the movie where I felt as affected as the first time I saw Brian Cox in costume. Anyway, so that's fist bump moments. We digress. So let's move into star profiles and production development a little bit on this movie got made and all that. So let's start with Brad Pitt. Cue the picture, please.
Where's his head? Oh, wait, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter in this film.
Look at that body.
So jacked and oily.
Glimmering. Yeah. I bet you there's a lot of baby oil on set.
Yeah.
A lot of baby oil.
Yeah, this is Brad, what's a good, like, porn name for the back that plays Brad Pitt? What would it be, like, Brad Dick?
Brad Brad Python Pitt, or something. I don't know. We're not, that's not what we would pay us for.
In, like, inside your Trojan horse or something like that?
Oh, God. This is horrible.
This is getting really uncomfortable. let's talk about his movies that he made prior to this. So Brad Pitt was
a golden boy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point, the 90s were huge for him.
Mm-hmm.
The 90s were like Brad Pitt coming up at the same time as like Damon, Affleck. You know, he was very much in that same generation
actors. But he was a leap ahead of them.
Yeah, well, sort of, right? Because they won the Oscar in 98.
For writing.
Yeah, and he got the nod in 95 for 12 Monkeys. Mm-hmm. And so by the time, like, 2000 rolls around and you're looking at, okay, you know, Matt Damon had done Ripley. So you're like, oh, he's the better actor of the two.
And then Identity.
Yeah, that's like 03, I think, mm-hmm. right? It's the year before this. And then Affleck had, you know, Pearl Harbor had come out in, like, 2000, 2001. So they were all very much, like, the forefront guys, right? I mean, to some degree, you could even have put, like, Josh Hartnett would have been a step behind them, right?
Josh Hartnett.
Like, he's the kind of actor that was a kind of a step behind these guys.
40 Days and 40 Nights, it's a good one.
People love that movie.
Yeah.
So Pitt's movies right before this, Ocean's 11, 2001, Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas, 03, and then Ocean's 12 and 04.
Mm-hmm. And so, the reason I put Sinbad on there instead of, because he had another action movie a little farther back, that's like the definition of one of those things where you get the biggest A-lister in the world and you throw his name on a digital movie or an animated movie and everyone's going to go see it. So that's why I put it on there, is because that was his star power at the time. And then with Ocean's 11 and 12 before and after that, like,
yeah,
it's huge. Those movies are massive.
Gigantic. Yeah, gigantic. And I mean, and his run really, really continued. Like, it's funny because it's after this movie, like mid like 05, 06, 07, that I think he actually really came into his own as an actor.
Right. That's when he does, like, isn't that when he does, like, The Mexican and.
I think it's a little earlier, but, like, Babel, I think it's like 06.
Yeah, okay.
And I want to say, like, Benjamin Button's, like, 08 or 09, probably.
Yeah.
Years later. Something like that. And, like, you know, The Tree of Life is, like, 2011. Like, mm-hmm. he's in some pretty interesting movies later, Inglourious Basterds. Like,
yeah, I love the way his career's gone.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important that he did what he did.
Yeah, he's just had a good run where he just started to be involved in better projects and mm-hmm. a little choosier. Like, he wasn't going to do Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13. Those are indicative of, like, and Troy is another one where you're just like, that's right. You signing on to a project and being this young guy who wants to capitalize and do the biggest movie you can do. And
I mean, he could have thought it was going to be an Oscar movie.
Probably did.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't blame the guy.
Absolutely.
So, yeah,
or
I think.
Is it? Or his abs.
Yeah, he got ridiculous. I mean, that's like the funny thing is I remember this movie came out. I had no interest in seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
This and Alexander were like right around the same time.
Ugh, poor Alexander.
Yeah, and this movie made all the money. That movie missed. But really, the story that came out of this movie that everyone talked about, there was two things. It was how naked the smoking hot Diane Kruger got.
Yes.
And how hard Brad Pitt worked out to look the way he looked.
Diane Kruger looked great.
I think that Diane Kruger is the most interesting part of this movie.
I wonder why.
I love Diane Kruger.
I think that Peter O'Toole is the most interesting part of this movie.
He's very good.
He's very good. But have you seen her?
I read that in the director's cut, by the way, which is almost 40 minutes longer.
Oh, perfect.
There's a lot more Diane Kruger nudity. I just read this today.
So we'll be watching that today.
Yeah, but... I think that actually, despite the fact that like there was some nudity in this movie...
Mm-hmm. I always forget this movie's rated R. It totally feels like a PG-13 movie.
It totally does, yeah. I think Alexander had like far more uncomfortable nudity. Don't you see like Colin Farrell's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
Like, you see like, Colin Farrell's like sack in that movie from behind something. Or something?
I've only seen it like once.
I've never watched it.
I forgot it. That's got to be why this movie did so well worldwide and not domestically.
Yeah.
It's because it was rated R. It should have been a PG-13 movie, and it would have made, I guarantee you, it would have made at least twice as much money in the States.
Oh my God, if this movie had been PG-13, it would be remembered exactly the way I remember it, actually.
Yeah.
Right. It's just like, this to me, even though it's an epic, even though it's Troy, feels like Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It when they came out, like, I didn't want to see either one in theaters because I felt like I was already smarter than this, and like, that's what this movie in memory feels like.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like, I'm trying to think of like a movie that missed the mark. Kingdom of Heaven from 06, I think.
Right, and we're going to get into Orlando Bloom. And the reason that I pulled Orlando Bloom instead of Eric Bana for this was because we had this conversation during the movie about how this guy has just been pigeonholed into being a bitch.
Yeah.
And he's not a bad actor. He's not a good actor.
He has his moments.
Like, I mean, I pulled that picture for the exact reason that I just said.
Yeah.
Like, the poor dude is legless, and then he's this guy, and in Kingdom of Heaven, he's fine. He's
pirates.
Yeah, and pirates. Yeah. He's like a little baby, and he's all crying about his dad. Like, he's just been pigeonholed into this role of just being a wuss.
He's the wuss. He's the elf with the elf ears. Yeah.
He's the whiner.
He's the dude in the movie that isn't Johnny Depp. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, totally. And I mean, I think the other complaint, like I said, there's no emotional gravity in this movie, is that, like, there's not a likable character in the whole movie aside from Peter O'Toole.
No.
He's the only likable character. And he's only likable because he's, like, feels like he's a good father. Like, he's, like...
Yeah, and he also delivers a great...
Yeah.
Speech. Or, I mean, when he talks to Achilles, it's the best acting in the whole movie.
I guess, like, Eric Bana is kind of likable, but the problem with Eric Bana's
good.
The problem with Eric Bana's character in this movie is that he comes in, he's defending his brother who's a wuss. So you're like, okay, already, like, it's a shame you have to do the dirty here a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, there's no way you're going to beat Brad Pitt because he's the star of the movie. So you're going to die.
You're overshadowed the whole time, even though you're like, you're Hector, you're the greatest warrior in Troy. But the whole thing's about Orlando Bloom and Diane Kruger and Brad Pitt. And you're just in the way.
Completely. And like, that's, if you think about like the story, the actual story of Troy, the rivalry of Hector and Achilles is a part of the story that's very important.
Right.
You're supposed to love and respect both.
They should have made the movie about that.
Yeah. And he should have been, it shouldn't have been like Brad Pitt on the cover. It should have been like Brad Pitt maybe is in the movie a little less and Hector's in the movie a little more. And you actually make them like, so Gavin was talking about in the Warrior episode, two trains running, you don't know how it's going to end. I mean, you know how the story's going to end.
But right.
From an audience point of view, there is zero part of me that felt in any way confident. No. You know what I mean?
I from about an hour and a half into the movie, I think if you watch it the first time, you can pick everything out that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Achilles is going to kill Hector.
Yep.
Hector is going to kill Brendan Gleeson before he kills Orlando Bloom, and Orlando Bloom is going to avenge everything by killing Achilles.
Yeah.
By shooting him in the Achilles.
And get away because he's a bitch and that's how this type of thing works.
Yeah.
I guess the only part that's like surprising is Agamemnon killing Peter O'Toole's character.
Yeah, that sucked.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. It's cool. But it doesn't suck because of anything bad. It's just like, I like Peter O'Toole so much.
It's like you almost would have thought that Agamemnon would have died. But I mean, again...
Well, he does. Rose Byrne stabs him in the neck.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Which is a good death.
Totally forgot
before
about
this
that.
This war's over, I will stand over your corpse.
I did think it was interesting reading, and we sort of have covered...
Yeah, Ned Kelly, 2003, Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, The Curse of the Black Pearl, 2003 as well, and Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, 2003.
I mean, he was a heartthrob. People loved him.
Oh, he's massive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
Elizabeth Town came out.
Elizabeth
you
Town.
Know, like,
which is, by the way, did you know that they went into production with Ashton Kutcher starring? They fired him after a month. Because Cameron Crowe didn't like his acting, they fired him, replaced him with
Orlando.
Yeah.
And that actually, movie, kind of like that movie.
That movie's like one of those ones where I watch it and I'm like, I really want to like this movie because I love Cameron Crowe.
Yeah.
And I get it. And like, there are like, his good moments, like what Cameron Crowe does
There's
well.
There's some Tom Petty songs in there.
Are great. Yeah. But he tried to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because in Jerry Maguire, he's doing the free fall and thing driving. In this movie, he uses Learning to Fly, which is like the other most famous one, and it's just the same scene.
Yeah.
And it's like, it felt like kind of a retread, but...
All right, so production development.
Yes. So David Benioff, who is the writer of this film, actually, unlike the writer of Gladiator, whose name is escaping me right now, we talked about last week.
Right.
Benioff is like an actually good writer.
He's a good writer.
He's the showrunner of Game of Thrones. He's written on almost every episode.
He's credited as the creator. Like,
yeah, I mean, the guy is a house. Like, he's written some
and
big
the first
stuff.
Thing he ever wrote, I believe, was The 25th Hour with Ed Norton, which is a phenomenal movie.
Spike Lee film, yeah.
Yeah, very, very good.
From like 2002 or something.
Something like that. Yeah. And then he did Troy, which, you know, we can't all be perfect.
Yeah.
And he has some other decent credits as Brothers in there, which I haven't seen it, but...
Yeah, Brothers pretty good.
Yeah.
This movie's interesting because Benioff, talking about the film, actually says that every time there was an opportunity to where you had to choose between the source material and the film, they would always err on the side of what would make the film better.
Right.
That was the decision that they made. So some of the adaptation stuff from the Iliad, I think, comes from a point of view of let's edit and let's write to make this a more cohesive movie, which is like, I don't really know if that's the right thing to have done. It feels like a very kind of predictable and unsatisfactory a lot of what happens, but you can't deviate too much from the story because it is a classic story. Benioff's kind of a badass. I mean, Wolfgang Peterson is the director. Peterson actually is the director of the very first film we ever did on the show, Air Force One.
Yeah, I went back and watched one of our very first episodes, by the way.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's amazing what 40 episodes will do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With an hour 15 per episode-ish, we've done a lot of hours of this show.
Yeah.
And a lot of critiquing of action movies and the things that make them great. But, Wolfgang got famous from Das Boot originally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like in the 80s. And so...
That was a big one.
Huge one. And so he ended up doing, The Postman?
I don't know, but we had him on for Air Force One. I mean, we didn't have him on, but you know, he wrote Air Force or directed Air Force One, which is one of my favorites.
I know he direct a submarine movie. I know that he did. So obviously he did this film in 2004. He did Poseidon in 2008. And again,
nobody's perfect.
Yeah, Air Force One in 1997. I think that we're forgetting the one submarine movie. That's the movie I think we're forgetting.
You know, it was Neverending Story and Outbreak.
Yeah, in the 90s.
Yeah, there's something earlier. Can't remember what it is.
I feel like the submarine movie is maybe like U-571 or something.
Could
like
be.
That.
Could be. I mean, there was two that came out in that time. It was U-571 and K-19, the Widowmaker.
And K-19 is Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it is U-571.
Okay.
But in any case, we're just jumping around on him. But yeah, I mean, Peterson is well-respected. He has an epic scale in his mind of how he wants to shoot things. Even Air Force One was a bit of an epic, like, in the way they designed the whole airplane and everything.
Yeah, and, like, the landing and all that, and, like, the airfield.
Yeah. These big scenes in mind. So, and I mean, to this movie's credit, some of that stuff is very cool. Like, the fight sequences are really cool in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that the battle between Hector and Brad Pitt,
that's sweet.
Is a good,
it's very good,
good fight.
And I like the freak out by Agamemnon after Gleason gets killed, and then they charge, and like the warriors of Troy like hold him off no problem with the arrows and all that. And Achilles is just watching from a distance. There's a lot of really great moments in this movie.
Definitely.
It's just if this movie was probably 40 minutes shorter, it would be amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can't even imagine watching the director's cut, where the director's cut is supposedly like 3 hours and 25 minutes or something.
Yeah. I was falling asleep at the end of this one.
Yeah,
I mean, it was rough.
It's just, it's just missing the mark on that emotional level. The production team on this movie, this is one of those really hard ones where you have a ton of producers because of the size of the film.
Right.
A lot of the design for this movie is done overseas. They built full sets, you know, like
they built Troy.
Yeah, in Mexico is where they built the outside of the gates of Troy.
Yep,
they built a set in Mexico, and so that's like a full sized set. And then they actually built the inside of Troy in was it Malta?
Malta.
Yeah, Malta. That's what it was. And so there was a tremendous amount of money invested into making this all believable.
Right, but again, Wolfgang was pretty much. He was like the exec, the biggest producer on the movie. So we're not going to talk about all of them. We just heard the breakdown on Wolfgang, but I mean, I get it. I really respect when directors and producers, like when they are invested in their own movie. I think that's very important. You know, like it's something they created and they believe in it. And that's why this is the interesting part when we get into critical reception and box office. Is this movie cost $175 million to make, and it was produced by Warner Brothers. It opened May 14th, 2004, great summer movie. But the money that it made in the States was only $133 million, which was very surprising to me. I thought they were going to make a lot more money than that with this cast and Brad Pitt and all that. It made $364 million worldwide, which brings it to almost $500 million.
Yes.
This is a good – I mean, that's great turnaround. Great.
100%. I think that year, I think it was in the U.S., it was the eighth highest grossing film domestically.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think at the time when the totals added up and it was finally out of theaters internationally, I think at the time it was the 60th highest grossing film worldwide all time.
Okay.
But that was in 2004.
Right.
And you've had
a lot of things have happened since then.
Of movies that have come out and kind of blown it out of the water since then. So, it's a weird one. I mean, if you think back to when this movie came out, what was going on in film at the time, like – you always have, you know, the copycat effect. So, mm-hmm. So Gladiator wins Best Picture in 2000, and you have Oliver Stone, who had been developing Alexander for a long time, and I'm sure that this movie had been in discussion and been in development for a long time. And so the fact that this movie and Alexander were both being advertised sort of within a year of each other was a turnoff for me as an audience member.
I mean, you get oversaturated, and that happens a lot. It's happened with volcano movies, earthquake or natural disaster movies. It's happened with all types superhero movies. It happens, and it's a problem, but it's, you know, who do you appeal to?
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, The Patriot was 99 and Gladiator's 2000, so mm-hmm. It's like by the time Gladiator comes out and does well – you're just like, okay, this kind of subject matter.
Right, because 4 years prior or 5 years prior was Braveheart.
These sort of historical epics. And so I think that when this movie came out, I wasn't particularly interested in watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, others were. I mean,
it made a lot. It made $46 million opening weekend, which is a third of what it made total in the States, which means that this is, again, not when social media was as prevalent. People were talking. They're like, I went and saw it, and it was okay.
Yeah.
You know, probably wait to watch it on video.
Yeah, if this movie had come out now, totally. Yeah. Would have been a different story.
Absolutely. But critics gave it a 7.2. IMDb gives this movie a 7.2.
Which is weird.
Really high.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, you talk about your opinion of this movie when you saw it originally and your mm-hmm. opinion of it now.
Right.
A lot of the rating on IMDb, a lot of that comes from users. I mean,
totally.
A number of them.
Who knows? They probably did it right when it came out. They could have been my age then, or they could have been, you know, 22 then.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is why that's why I've always felt that the Tomatoes score is like usually a little bit more accurate.
Right.
But then again, the Tomatoes audience score on this is 73%,
which is basically the exact same thing. Yeah, critics give it a 61, and all critics give it a 54. It's a lot higher than I thought. I mean, when we were talking, because we've done this a lot, we've looked at rankings of these things a lot, and it. It was one of those where we thought, okay, maybe the critics give it like 30, the top critics give it like maybe in the 40s, and then the audience will give it like in the high 60s to 70s.
Yeah. I think it's interesting when you look at Brad Pitt's worldwide box office here.
Oh, yeah, let's pull up this graphic.
So Troy, worldwide, it made $497.4 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the second highest grossing all-time worldwide film. World War Z made $540 million, but that was also 10 years later. So Troy really by an unadjusted metric, is his highest grossing film of all
time.
By far. Which is really a testament to his star power at the time and why this movie probably got made. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't think of one other actor in 2004 that if you were to put into the role of Achilles, it would have been as big.
Right.
In the commercial sense. I mean, Tom Cruise did The Last Samurai the year before this, and that movie also did very well internationally, but in 03, 04, like...
Look at the movies. It's Troy, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and then Ocean's 11 and 12 were all in that same little run of Pitt.
Yeah.
It was like,
I guess Russell
Crowe. Could do no wrong.
I guess Russell Crowe, but even then, his brand had already been diluted a little bit.
I don't think Russell Crowe never did and never will have the star power
of Brad Pitt.
Because he's an asshole.
Yeah.
He's known to be an asshole. He's not pleasant to work with or be around. He's just a brilliant actor.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, in 03, 04, he was doing all of his Ridley Scott follow-ups his follow-up to the Ridley Scott films, because it was, it was Gladiator, Beautiful Mind, Master and Commander,
Cinderella Man,
I think a Good Year was in there,
a little later.
I think that's a testament to it, is ever, you know, worldwide, people love the star of Brad Pitt. He had a lot of time to build that star up.
Yeah.
Because Thelma Louise is 91.
I was going to say, it'd been almost 20 years.
That's his break.
10 years.
That's his breakout role. And then through the 90s, it's like he has all these movies that are remembered by people. So River Runs Through It and
Legends of the Fall.
Legends of the Fall. And you have like Seven, and you have Fight Club, and you have like
12 Monkeys.
Meet Joe Black, yeah. 12 Monkeys. Like the 90s for Brad Pitt were big.
That was his golden age, for sure.
Yeah, but he's managed to sort of have the second run, the whole 2000s. They were the bigger, more commercial films. Mm-hmm. And then the last decade really has been
like indie.
Yeah, indie and like critically acclaimed big movies. So like, you know, a movie like the Terrence Malick film, The Tree of Life.
Yeah.
You know, like,
great movie.
That's like a classic example of like Brad Pitt gets to star in a Terrence Malick movie. That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, Brad Pitt is the star of Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Like, that's a huge deal.
That's like a Tom Hanks role back when Tom Hanks was at the top of his game.
Yes.
That's like who would have gotten that role.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's pretty interesting.
So I got a couple critic reviews here. A.O. Scott from the New York Times is a fresh review, says, "This big, expensive, intermittently campy example of Hollywood Homerism is desperate to be regarded as a classic. It isn't. But it's not so bad either." And I pulled that because that probably could have just been my thesis statement.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It covers everything that we talked about. It's campy. It talks about Hollywood Homerism, which is basically what you talked about.
Yeah.
And it wants to be so badly like Braveheart, like Gladiator, and it just misses.
Right.
Yeah.
Fully, yeah. And so then you have James Berardinelli.
Berardinelli
from Real Views. Should I just do the rest of the episode in that voice, maybe?
Probably not.
"All of the visual majesty that hundreds of millions of dollars can buy cannot obscurely perfunctorily and not satisfying development of the major characters."
For all of you guys that don't speak that language now.
"All of the visual majesty that hundreds of millions of dollars can buy cannot obscure the perfunctory and unsatisfying development of the major characters." Which is, that to me is like the biggest thing, because...
Perfect.
Like...
There's no soul. We talk about this in movies a lot.
Any of them. If you think about some of the scenes when Brad Pitt first meets Rose Byrne's character.
This makes no sense.
She's like left for him as like a slave girl, but she's royalty. And he like...
And he can just tell
that she's great immediately. And he's like, "You're the only person in Troy that I don't want to kill."
Right.
Or you know, and he's like, you're like, okay, you've talked to her for literally about 2 minutes.
You're willing to kill the king...
To
save this slave girl that you know nothing about.
Yeah, like that doesn't make any sense. Like it just... Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, like, the Diane Kruger scenes, like, she's gorgeous, but, like, Orlando Bloom is such an unlikable character. That, like, their love is just, like, a complete waste of time.
Yeah, because you gotta have the risk and the reward. Like, the reward is the greatest love. Like, these two, it's just, you don't feel it, ever. You never feel like, really?
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people are gonna die for this guy and his girl? It just, it's not worth it.
"The face that launched 1,000 ships.
1,000 ships.
Now, Sean Bean, on the other hand, is very sweet in this movie.
Epic.
Yeah. But Sean Bean's just sweet in general.
He's always awesome.
Yeah, it's Boromir. This is 2 years. 3 years later? He dies in the first one.
Yeah,
he dies in 01.
Yeah, he already existed.
Yeah.
Boromir's so good.
So sweet. Like, okay.
The little ones.
Yeah. So it's interesting, actually, just jumping to that movie for a second, because I think we've said we'll never do a Lord of the Rings movie on the show.
And I totally understand, but they're... literally some of my favorite movies.
Yeah, we are expanding our horizons, and it's definitely like the rules are getting a little looser, because it seems to be that it's just more fun to do like big budget movies that we like a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe, but the thing I was just thinking about, like when you try to create scenes that are memorable and epic versus when you try and fail, and like the scene with Boromir getting shot with the arrows at the end of the first movie,
so good,
is one of the most memorable scenes in modern cinema that I can think of.
What are you going to do right now?
What?
Are you going to talk about how Brad Pitt gets shot with the arrows at the end and it just falls completely flat, compared to it?
Doesn't even matter.
Like, when Boromir gets hit with those arrows, not only are they massive, and it's getting shot by a half man, half orc, but like, you can feel the hits.
Yeah.
You feel them.
And you're like, no, Boromir! And then the hobbits are like, no! He stands up and he fights with the arrows in him. Oh, it's heartbreaking.
It is.
Heartbreakingly great scene.
And like, Brad Pitt getting shot by these like toothpick-sized arrows from Orlando Bloom's like,
yeah.
Like, his face that he makes is horrible.
It's also like, I just am sort of like, he was an archer, he's an elf archer in the Lord of the Rings movies.
You guys couldn't have picked anyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not good.
Not good.
But in any case, we digress.
We actually like to watch this movie.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's like definitely enjoyable to talk about. And like, this is the nature of the game. It's like, this is a movie that is loved by the same audience and genre that we do. So it counts. It's like a movie that we can do on the show, and it's not a bad movie compared to bad movies.
No,
it's just not as good of a movie on the levels that I expected it to be good.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
should we get into our favorite line?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's good. I mean, unless we wanted to debate what the ultimate action scene in this movie is, I don't know. I sort of feel like
the battle between Hector and Achilles.
I think so.
Yeah,
I think it's pretty sweet.
It's
super
sweet.
I actually like his jump punch sword move.
I do too. I just felt like they used it 5 times instead of 3 times.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, they should have used it just 3 times.
Yeah,
but it's sweet.
Yeah,
I mean, Brad Pitt took ballet for a while for prepping for this movie. Yeah, because he had light on his feet, and he had to quit smoking. And I mean, he worked his ass off for this film.
Fully. On a physical level, he nails it.
Yes.
Aside from being so tan and so jacked.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the point.
And so blonde. Yeah, he's supposed to look like a Greek god.
Yeah, which, and like, they like blew his eyes up, right? He's like...
Oh, did they? Like, made him more blue than normal?
I think so.
I believe it.
I don't remember Brad Pitt's eyes ever looking like that.
Yeah. Who was staring at his eyes in this movie? I thought that was the whole point you guys were trying to make.
Mark's called us out.
So let's talk about favorite line.
Yeah. Okay. So do you want to go first?
Yeah. I'll go first. Okay. So my favorite line is the hero qualifier. It's when Agamemnon... I mean, actually, both times Agamemnon talks about Achilles, I like both.
Yeah.
So when he first shows up and he's walking past him and he's like, "Of all the gods, I hate him the most."
Yeah.
Which is great. But the real line that I like is when it's Agamemnon, it's Brendan Gleeson and Brian Cox arguing.
Right.
And he's like, "You just need Achilles." And he's like, "He can't be controlled."
Yeah.
He's like, "He needs to be unleashed," or something like that. He doesn't need to be controlled. He needs to be unleashed. He's a master of killing, or whatever he says. I can't remember the exact line, but
he's like, "Put on this earth to kill."
Yeah. He's put on this earth to kill. And like, that's like a classic hero
qualifier.
That's
like literally out of like early 90s action movies.
He spent 7 years in a Serbian prison.
Rambo, John Jay,
yeah.
Helicopter pilot, language specialist.
Yeah. Let's not forget the president flew more helicopter missions under my command than any other soldier. He knows how to fight. Which is also, that's from another Wolfgang Peterson movie.
Absolutely.
So he likes that sort of thing.
I have two, but I think I'm just going to stick with one. And it's right after Hector kills
Garrett Hedlund. Yeah.
And he says, and when he approaches Achilles, and he's like, "I thought it was you." And then Achilles gives a speech, and he's like, "You will wander the underworld blind and deaf and dumb, and everyone will know this is Hector, the fool that thought he killed Achilles."
Yeah.
Just sweet.
Yeah, it's a good line.
And then he kills him.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Takes him out.
His death is gnarly.
Yeah.
And then he drags him behind the horse, like...
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, no, it is sweet that, like, it's just so, like, tragically unabashed. Like, he just, like, shows up and just, like... He's just better. He just kills him.
And everything.
Just kills him in front of his dad. Like,
and his wife and his brother and the whole army that he commands.
And in that sense, that part of it is successful.
It's sweet. He's ruthless.
Yeah. Just driven by just arrogance and anger.
And I do like that. Again, this is why I love our show. Is you talk about the movie and you break it down and you realize there's so many good parts about this movie and there's just things that you don't think about.
Yeah.
And I do love that short moment that he has with his mom, the god, and she's like, "If you go to this war, it'll be the greatest war that's ever happened, and everyone will remember your name, but you won't come home."
Yeah.
And he's just like, glory or life.
Or life, yeah, because he wants to be remembered for dying in the war. And I mean, we should also talk about, we didn't even mention it, but Garrett Hedlund, if anybody doesn't know the story, Garrett Hedlund was this kid from Arizona who was...
19 years old,
and he was driving to Los Angeles for auditions, and he got in with a management company, I don't exactly remember which one, but managed to get in with a management company, landed this role as his first movie role.
Trying in a month, while living in Arizona... trying to be an actor in LA for 1 month, he got this role.
He booked this role, and within the same year, because of the nature of the game, because he's this young, hot new guy, he was in Four Brothers, the Friday Night Lights movie.
So Garrett Hedlund weighs 145 pounds at his natural weight at this time. By the time he was in Friday Night Lights, he weighed 200 pounds.
Wow.
He put on 30 for this and 40 for that, essentially.
Wow.
Or, something like that.
Crazy.
200 pounds.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's insane. That's favorite line. Hero villain ranking is tough in this because they don't rank.
I got a better idea this week.
What?
Because they're not going to rank. Yeah. I already know that. I think that we should rank the characters of this movie Not from the greatest performance from best to worst, but the sweetest.
Who's the sweetest?
Who's the sweetest?
Well, because I don't think we're going to do a recast this week, right? We're going to skip it.
I think we should skip
There's
it.
Just too many characters.
Too many
recast.
Characters. It's like right in that middle.
Yeah.
To where we can't go new, we can't go old.
All right, let's let's do that, and maybe we'll rank where the movie is on our personal list.
Yeah, we'll do this. I like this.
Okay, so here are the 10 characters that I think we should rank.
Okay,
we've got I'm going to list by actor name.
Sure,
trying to remember all of their characters'
that's
names
is impossible.
We're going to go Brad Pitt, Eric Bana, Orlando Bloom, Peter O'Toole, Brian Cox, Sean Bean, Diane Kruger, Garrett Hedlund, Rose Byrne, Brendan Gleeson. We have 10 characters to rank. Who is the sweetest? This is a collective ranking, I'm assuming?
Yeah, we'll do it collectively.
Okay, who's the worst of the 10? The character who is the least sweet in any way, shape, or form? I think I gotta go Rose Byrne is the worst character.
I'm going to go her as the absolute... Hold on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So she's 10.
Okay, so we're going to go Byrne is 10.
I think Hedlund is 9.
He's that bad? I mean, you just hate him.
He has hate him. You know how long I've lived here and trying. I mean, who else would it be?
For the ninth, I guess
Cox.
Cox is way sweeter. He's like unabashedly fat. Like it's just like Cox is like actually like has an argument as like one of the three sweetest characters.
Oh, totally.
Because he's so just like
he just doesn't give a shit.
Unapologetic. Yeah. Like I love.
Imagine like the prep that Cox had to do for this movie compared to what Pitt had to do for this movie.
Brad Cox put on the sweet wig.
Just keep eating
and his armor. Okay, I'll do the part. Oh,
good.
I would say the only argument that I would put at number nine. That I think Hedlund is maybe sweeter than is Orlando Bloom. I think for me Bloom is 9.
I think that's good. I think Hedlund goes to 8 and I think Bloom is 9.
Yeah,
because Hedlund at least like wants to fight.
Yeah, like Bloom is like almost the 10th. I would almost argue that he's the worst character in the movie. Like he is the opposite of sweet. He kills Achilles and he's not sweet at all.
No.
No. So then I would say the 6th character on this list.
No, 7th.
7th.
It's got to be Kruger.
Gleason.
Really?
Oh, Kruger's so much sweeter than Gleason.
She's just hot.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, great. Totally. And it's way more relevant.
Totally, and that's what matters.
Way more relevant than Gleason.
All right, so Gleason is 7. Kruger is 6.
Yeah, let's not be so fast.
Kruger is 6, for sure.
Okay, I'll give you that.
And then I think you gotta go Pitt.
Yeah, he's like not as sweet
or
as...
It's gotta either be Pitt or Cox.
Love Cox.
Cox.
I guess Pitt is a little sweet. No.
Ha ha! Snuck it in. Pitt's a little sweeter. So Brian Cox.
No. Brian Cox is sweeter than Pitt.
Okay.
I'm going Pitt next, and then I'm gonna go. And then I'm gonna go. In fact,
Brian Cox just moved from like last place to first place.
So we have to go number 4 right now.
Yeah.
The 4th sweetest character. So we have the four characters in question left are Peter O'Toole, Eric Bana, Sean Bean,
and Brian Cox.
So I guess you got to go Brian Cox is.
No, you go Sean Bean. Cox is third.
All right.
So Sean Bean is 4th. Brian Cox is 3rd. Bana's got to be 2, and O'Toole's got to be 1.
Yeah, I'll give that to you.
Yeah,
yeah, that's fair.
All right, so we have in order sweetest to least sweetest.
Yeah,
Peter O'Toole. Eric Bana, Brian Cox.
No, Sean Bean. Oh, no, I missed one.
Yeah,
you're right.
Brian Cox, Sean Bean, Brad Pitt, Diane Kruger,
Brendan
Gleeson, Garrett Hedlund, Orlando Bloom, and Rose Byrne.
Break out the bronzer.
Oh, I love that Peter O'Toole is the best character in this movie.
He really is. And he's the best actor. I mean, if he's not the best actor in the movie, he's... the most accomplished actor in the movie.
Yeah, and every scene he's in is believable.
Yeah, Eric Bana grew on me the more I thought about him in this movie.
He's good.
Yeah, I liked him more and more. And then Brian Cox, just because he's, like, so ridiculous.
Right.
And then Sean Bean. Like, Sean Bean almost, like, moves ahead of him because, like, Sean Bean's just, like, really sweet.
Sean Bean. He's always good.
Yeah. He's just great.
Winter is coming.
Yeah, he's great. He's fantastic. Ned Stark.
All right, Let's rank this movie now. Let's see where on earth this movie lands. Do we have the bottom half or just the top?
Just the top half, gents.
Okay, well, we don't need that then because it's definitely not going to be in there.
Yeah, I should have the bottom half I can pull up here.
I'm pretty positive that, for me, this movie is going to go right above Independence Day on my list.
You think so?
I think so, but I also think Independence Day might have moved up. But it's definitely ahead of Taking a Pelham 1, 2, 3.
Well, that's your worst movie, yes. So...
That's where you're wrong. Yeah, I think for me, it's got to be right ahead of Independence Day because it is so enjoyable. The acting, some of it's good enough.
Right.
You know? All right, we got a list here. Let's scroll down.
Here we go.
Independence Day is my 37th.
This is Andrew's?
Yeah. This is mine. Yeah, for sure. It's going to go right above Independence Day and right below Demolition Man for me.
So, like, Demolition Man is entertaining, but you think it's, like, just, like, generally sweeter? Like,
yeah, I mean, like, if I had to choose between watching the two of these movies, I'd pick Demolition Man for a couple reasons.
I think
it's,
I know.
It's more enjoyable, and then also it's half as long.
Simon Says.
And Simon Says.
And it's got that one incredible scene with the
like, the weird 80s, yeah. Like, hip-hop. Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. That's sweet. mark down on your sheet so you don't forget.
Okay, you got it. What about you? Like, I know that you have Independence Day really low on yours.
You have
Demolition Man really low.
Yeah, there. I mean, it's probably a pretty close. I'm just going to see, like, here, we're going to zoom in on it. So, okay, so I think if you're getting down to, like, that sort of, like, okay, like, Taken's better. Yeah, Furious 7 is, like, just more entertaining. First Blood Part 2 is more entertaining. Bourne Legacy is more entertaining. Jurassic World is... I wonder if this is better than Jurassic World. No, because it's so long.
Yeah.
I guess I would watch Independence Day ahead of this movie. God, is Troy the worst movie we've ever done?
No way.
Oh, it might be. Like, I think that...
Just say it, man. Just get it out there.
I'm going to put it between Independence Day and Demolition Man.
Yeah, same. But ours are switched.
So I'm going to put it at number 38. It's the second to last movie we've done.
Wow.
And that's, like, largely because of the length. It's like, it's just like, if I watched Bourne Legacy again, like, Bourne Legacy at least is, like, shorter and also sweet.
Uh-huh.
But, like, it's not that good, but, like...
This is just too long.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to watch Demolition Man again, necessarily more, just because, like, it has too much dumb stuff.
Yeah.
But if one's on TV, I'll bet you I watch Demolition Man.
I bet you would, too. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we got to rank it now. We got three categories, baby. What are they?
There are three action movie categories, guys. The three categories we always talk about are totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, ridiculously legitimate. So if a movie is totally legitimate, that's going to be something kind of in the realm of like The Fugitive or, you know, like...
Warrior.
Yeah, Warrior. Yes. Movies that hold Terminator 2. They hold together really well. They're dramatic films. Even if they're science fiction, they're well done. They resonate. They don't age. Mm-hmm. You don't laugh unintentionally. There is totally ridiculous, which are movies that like... From the get-go, you just know are silly. That's that category like Face Off and Con Air we were talking about where you just go into it kind of knowing you're going to laugh unintentionally for most of the movie. And like there's not really a lot in the way of like real performances to ground you. Like mm-hmm. It's just not even supposed to be that way. And then you have Ridiculously Legitimate, which is the combo category. So it's like this is going to be something where the movie is really compelling, but it makes you laugh unintentionally. There's a lot of really good, like a lot of stuff where you're like, if this was in a different movie or if this performance was in a different movie, I might really think this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Harris in The Rock, for instance, grounds the movie really, really well.
Gary Oldman, Air Force One.
Yeah, Gary Oldman. Yeah, so there's usually one really good performance. And just like Point Break is like a very compelling movie with some funny stuff. But like Swayze's great in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting. Holds up really well. This is a weird one.
It's tough. I mean, it's definitely between Totally Ridiculous and Ridiculously Legitimate.
For me, I have to go Totally Ridiculous.
I do too.
And the reason is because it's so long
mm-hmm.
that it's like...
It's trying way too hard.
You're just like sitting there at times of the movie just being like, whether it's how uncomfortably jacked Brad Pitt is to look at, or whether it's just like... Whether it's just like Orlando Bloom just like making you like a little sick to your stomach when he's on screen.
I mean, my moment of knowing that this was Totally Ridiculous was your fist pump moment.
Brian Cox.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, the moment that he came on the screen, we both started laughing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that's the definition of Totally Ridiculous.
I also like how, you know a movie is totally ridiculous when you're like, okay, it's got to be over pretty soon. You look and there's like an hour 20 left.
I know. When we did that, I was like, oh my God, there's still an hour and 10 minutes left.
Yeah.
I couldn't, and I'd seen this movie like a lot of times.
You're just like, this is, I don't even, I feel like I'm lost. I'm in the middle of this.
I'm stuck.
Yeah.
You're trapped.
So, that wraps us up to our last and final bit of the show.
Which is called
The Pitch. So this is where we're going to talk about the movies that we may or may not do next week. Because this week, obviously, we told you guys we were doing a different movie than we did. But mm-hmm. we're going to go back to our normal schedule. So we are going to be pitching two films with African-American stars in honor of Black History Month.
Absolutely. Because there's so many good ones.
Tons. I mean, come on. Yeah. It's the action movie.
And we probably would, we were going to do them anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a good time.
It's, so who wants to go first with their pitch? This is where we're going to battle out the movies, guys. We're going to sell them to you as an audience. You will vote on Twitter. We'll put up a Twitter poll as far as what movie we're going to do next week.
Right.
You'll let us know which movie you would like to see us cover on the show next week.
Exactly. And if we don't do it next week, the only reason would be is because we might have some guest stars on. We will do it the following week. We will do whatever movie wins this poll within the next 2 weeks.
Yes.
And the movie that I am nominating is The Art of War. Wesley Snipes in this movie is exactly our show.
Yeah.
It lands on every category that you could think of out of a great 90s action movie. Like, it's dumb. It's not written well. There's nudity when there doesn't need to be. There's excessive killing. The plot is ridiculous.
Snipes is badass?
Snipes is so badass. He has so many high kicks. Yeah. So many good shots. There's a shoot-off at the end. It's like a standoff in an empty office building. I love this movie.
Is this the one where on the cover he's standing like this with the guns?
Yeah.
It is,
pretty
right?
positive.
Yeah, yeah. I remember always seeing a cover
of this. Yeah, no. This movie is sweet. Not like how I thought Troy was sweet. This movie is actually perfect for our show.
Is it 2 hours and 48 minutes?
It's 2 hours and 10.
all right, guys. My pitch for next week is a little classic directed by a guy named Tony Scott.
Tony.
Called Crimson Tide.
Oh, so good.
The first collaboration between Denzel Washington and Tony Scott, starring Denzel and Gene Hackman. As unlikely adversaries trying to pilot a nuclear submarine in 1995. This is a movie that is in the same wheelhouse as The Hunt for Red October.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Hackman is like the old, you know, military, like Navy captain who runs the ship. And Denzel is the up-and-coming new captain who's
Young
supposed to
blood.
Be... Yeah, there's some racial undertones between the two of them, but like they're the smartest guys in the room. It's got a sweet cast. It's got Gandolfini. It's got Steve Zahn.
Love Steve Zahn.
Viggo Mortensen. Really, really good cast.
Yeah,
very entertaining movie. And
it's the beginning of an era. Tony Scott and Denzel.
Yeah, they did five together. This is one when we were very first doing the show.
Mm-hmm.
We watched this movie together.
We did.
We thought it was gonna be one of the early episodes,
mm-hmm.
and we are very excited to do.
I'd never seen it before watching. I mean, I'd seen like once.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But I didn't remember anything about it.
It's really sweet. Like, it's Tony Scott, like, really learning his stylized craft.
It's not quite Tony Scott yet.
No, because it's 95. Uh-huh. He didn't reunite with Denzel until 03, so I hope we get to do that one, but I'm happy to do either.
I think they'll be great.
Go find us on Twitter, guys, at AMA Podcast to vote on it. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media.
You can find me at Andrew Guy.
And thank you for watching an episode about Troy. Break out the bronzer.
Take care.
Bye, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.